Nation here in the Sam Nation studios deep behind the orange curtain. Yes, it's Thursday. Yes, it's not Friday. Yes, I promised that the show would be back on track at its usual time and place this week. Retracting said promises, I have a wedding that I must attend. Not just attend, I have to officiate at it. My friend and his fiance are absolutely insane for asking me to do this. So, did they tell me what to? No. No, I thought the best way, my favorite wedding officiant of all times is that priest in Princess Bride. If you're familiar with the old 80s movie. Marriage! Marriage is what brings us all together today. Terrible impression of that. So anyway, I look forward to your thoughts of what I should say tomorrow. I have until 7 p.m. to solicit your input, as always, on Twitter and email at SamNation and Sam@SamNation.com. This week, friends, this week, everything you need to know about the Democratic Party has been laid bare for us. Well, for one, we're still coming off the heels of the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. There has not been one whiff of regret, let alone apology, for what the Democratic Party did to that man. And as I've traveled, I was abroad last week and the week before. I've been talking to a lot of people since I've returned. People who are not dyed-in-the-wool Trumpists, people who are not committed, hardcore, deep-red Republicans, regular, intelligent, smart voting Americans. And I'm telling you, not anyone liked what they did to him in those confirmation hearings. There is a deep unease about that. So you still have this, you still have the aftertaste of this attempted lynching of Kavanaugh. Total BS. Now forget the fact that he was a minor, right? It's not even that. Uncorroborated reports, an attempt to absolutely smear and destroy somebody just because you disagree. Now, in that same vein, the reason the Kavanaugh thing isn't going away is because you have everyone from Hillary Clinton on down in the Democratic Party. Tim Kaine today said much of the same thing. What are they all saying? They're all saying the ends justify the means. The fight that we are fighting here, if they go low, we kick them in the face, is what Eric Holder said, former Attorney General of the United States. Make some top law enforcement officer. Let that sink in for a minute. Democrat after Democrat advocating for violence, advocating for obstruction, mob attacks. What's going on in Portland? My God, it looks like a third world country up there. Tell you right now, it probably smells like a third world country. But at any rate, the mayor there, if you haven't been following the story, the mayor in Portland, total liberal, left-wing nut, has told the police to stand down any and all efforts. And you've got Antifa up there running the streets. There are videos, just regular people trying to get to work, and mobs attacking them. And if they don't listen to what the mob tells them to do, because they're directing traffic. These people are all smoking pot and high on who knows what, but they're directing traffic. The guy's like, no, I got to get to work. I'm going right. You want me to go left? Metaphorically and literally. And they go, no, I'm going right. And the mob turns on him and starts beating on the car and smashing windows. And the police are nowhere to be found. Because the left has lost its mind. To them, 2016 is the event that has led to a complete ungluing of any common sense, of any ration, and of any empathy. And last time I checked, the only thing, I mean literally the only thing that the Democratic Party had going for it was that they cared, quote unquote, about people, about humanity, about lives, about dignity, and blah, 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 blah. It's all nonsense. So you have that being laid bare. The other event that totally destroys the myth of the Democratic Party is this nonsense with Elizabeth Warren. Now, you're going to say, yeah, Sam, but that's just one senator from a kook state, right? She's a Massachusetts lib, which puts her at the fringe of the fringe of the fringe. But I'm going to say, friends, not so fast. And not so fast for this key reason. Yeah, she's a trans Indian. That's what we... You think she's the first? You think this is... Rachel Dolezal, remember her? Remember that, you know, Czech lady who lived in, where was it, Minnesota, pretended to be black so she could have a position with the NAACP? You know, she crimped her hair. I don't know, put a lot of bronzer on. I don't know what the hell that was. And everybody was okay with it. Everything was fine. And the reason, listen, it's the same deal. When you look at liberalism in this country, where is it at its worst? Well, as a business owner, I'd say in the unions, right? No, it's in academia, right? In colleges, in universities. And what it, yeah, okay, so because of this, right? The status symbol when you are in academia is how big of a victim you are based on what your race is. It is unbelievable, unbelievable racism when you really kind of peel it back and shed some light on it. And that is exactly what this entire nonsense with releasing these DNA results has done. Just to take you back and understand what this was all about, Elizabeth Warren, this isn't just her tiff with Trump. Got to remember there's some history here, right? This is a gal who, she got her gig at Harvard and at the University of Pennsylvania by identifying herself as a Cherokee Native American Indian. But the buy-in came from Harvard. The buy-in came from UPenn. The buy-in came from these academic institutions who are so desperate to say, oh, we love minorities. Whoa. Right. And they're the ones who allowed it to happen. Fordham Law School, Fordham Law Review. What is this from? I think this was from 1995. This is how these lib institutions think. I'm going to quote here. There are few women of color who hold important positions in academy. Excuse me. I'm struggling here in the morning. Academy. Fortune 500 companies. Or other prominent fields or industries. This is not inconsequential. What do we mean? That means this is bad. This is really bad. We don't have enough minorities and people of color. This is not good. Women of color, none. Or diversifying. Okay, so it goes on. Diversifying these areas in these arenas in part by adding qualified women of color to their ranks remains important for many reasons. For one, there are scant women of color as role models. In my 3 years at Stanford Law School, there were no professors who are women of color. Yeah, okay, whatever. And here's the gem line. You ready for it? Here it comes. Quote, Harvard Law School hired its first woman of color, Elizabeth Warren, in 1995. Now, where do you think they got that? They didn't make it up from thin air. It was published. This is a published fact. Who was publishing it? Harvard. Harvard, with a straight face, had this blonde white lady with quote-unquote high cheekbones who published some BS recipes about crab meat in a powwow chow cookbook. Crab meat. I'm cuisine illiterate, but last time I checked, the Cherokee Nation was landlocked. And I don't know where the hell the Cherokee crab meat recipe came from, but some people who do understand cuisine say it was totally borrowed from French cooking. Cordon Bleu cooking. So anyway, this is the kind of nonsense that's going, and it goes on everywhere. I remember when I was applying for law school, and I was rejected by a local university that I am going to name. The University of California, Irvine School of Law, then led by the one and only Erwin Chemerinsky. Now, Chemerinsky, because he's a liberal hack, say what you want of him as far as a legal mind, a liberal hack. And Chemerinsky, the first thing he does is cover his hiney by hiring a minority as the dean of admissions. Now, this is a common thing that universities do, because they want to make sure they're promoting diversity. Now, diversity, by the way, doesn't just mean minorities. If it did, Harvard wouldn't be embroiled in this crazy lawsuit where they're turning away qualified Asians and discriminating against Asians. And do you know why? Do you know why they're fine with discriminating against Asians? But, oh, God, we need women of color. We need those Cherokee. We need blacks. We need Latinos. It's so offensive when you strip it all down, when you take it apart. Democrats want minorities that they think are pathetic. That's the God's honest truth about it. And nothing in my life has shed a greater light on this than this nonsense with Elizabeth Warren. But let me continue my story here about UCLA. So anyway, so I apply. I get rejected. And frankly, I'm not qualified. I want to tell you that. My numbers were not where they needed to be for the type of applicants that UCI was taking there in the very beginning. And I get a letter back from Dean Janice Austin, who was the dean of admissions, a black woman. It had multiple typographical errors. So being who I am, I responded. I looked her up. I looked her up, and she had this she had this scholarly article that was published called, Keeping Your Hand on the Plow, the Story of One African-American something, academic professional, whatever, admissions officer, whatever. In the title of the piece, she misspelled keeping and misspelled American. And the whole thing was, so I wrote a pretty rude letter, honestly, back saying, you know, I'm really sorry, you know, you rejected me. I just, you know, a spirit of being a nice guy, I want to point out some typographical errors here, because I think you've probably sent this letter out to other people and it's pretty embarrassing. And also would point to your scholarly piece here where you don't know how to spell American. I also put a line in there where she said the challenges, you know, so I said maybe these errors are. What did I say? Well, it's an analogy of the challenges you speak of. Yeah, it wasn't nice. Anyway, she melted down and she responded to my letter. And in her response, it had more typographical errors. And the point is, what's the point here? Okay, if you can't write a letter, you probably shouldn't be anywhere near a law school. Okay, being a lawyer, you got to write. The only reason she had that job, the only reason, because of her color. That's it. Window dressing. It's so offensive. It is so racist. It is crazy. Now, as a little side note here, Janice Austin was poor woman. She was so distraught by all of this. I'm not going to claim credit for this, but she later became a man. Because I guess it wasn't enough in academia to be black. That wasn't in a hierarchy of victimhood. That's not good. So being a trans male apparently trumps that. So she wanted to move up the pyramid and help her career. That's not just conjecture, folks. Just conjecture on my part. So are you really what you saw the results here with Elizabeth Warren? Are you really a Cherokee? Are you anything? I mean, what is the percentage? 1/1024 white or Indian? By the way, the Stanford University professor that did this didn't sample Cherokee Indian DNA. They actually sampled DNA from South America, from people from Peru and surrounding areas. So she's just a plain old white lady. That's what this is. Now, initially, the buy-in on this is so good. Initially, the buy-in on all of this was from the media was very defensive. Oh, look, we have it. She's shown Trump. And Trump needs to pay up, right, because Trump promised her $1 million. Here is what the initial responses were when the news first broke on Monday.
Senator Elizabeth Warren doing something unprecedented after years of ridicule from President Trump over her claims of Native American ancestry. Today, the Massachusetts Democrat released results of a DNA test she says proves it.
Tonight, calling his bluff after relentless taunts by President Trump over Senator Elizabeth Warren's claims of Native American ancestry, Warren is now answering, her campaign releasing a DNA analysis. Today, President Trump was dismissive.
Senator Elizabeth Warren releasing DNA test results to back up her claims of Native American heritage.
Yes, she got him. She got the Trumpster. Boy, she showed him. When we come back, I'm going to tell you this narrative unraveled lickety-split. You wouldn't even believe it, how quickly it came apart at the seams, with even her own people mocking her. And what does it mean? How does this fit in? I'll tell you, this is a beginning of a call-out to a culture of systematic racism that has been perpetrated by the left on this country. And I will talk more about that when we come back. This, folks, this is big. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Rogowski, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, the best dressed radio talk show host in America behind the microphone reporting for duty. I'm wearing a tie for you guys today. I hope you like it. Well, a headdress. Should I wear a headdress too while I'm at it? Elizabeth Warren, United States Senator, trans Indian, made a big splash on Monday, releasing her these DNA results that basically prove she's white. To give you an idea, do you know what percentage that is? The 1/1024. First, it came out that it was 5-something. I don't even know how to pronounce it. Do you say 1/1024th Indian? So that's, I did some quick math, 0.098%. That's like my resting blood alcohol level. I don't know if, maybe that would make me Indian too. Ooh, is that a bad joke? Whatever, it's Sam Nation. Moving right along. I'm telling you, this is crazy. And she's peddled this nonsense for so many years. She's used it to benefit her career. But complicit in this have been these institutions that are supposedly so great and so noble and so respected, like Harvard, University of Pennsylvania, and similar schools that have done scholarly articles and pieces and feted Elizabeth Warren's victim status. You know, she claimed that her parents eloped because her mom was a Cherokee Indian. Ah, this is so good. My Czech grandmother probably had more Cherokee in her. So anyway, it comes out on Monday and everybody's like, yeah, Trump, pay up, Trump. Ah, you know, because Trump made that bet with her that if she has any Indian in her, that she would, that he'd pay $1 million to a charity of her choice. So Trump gets up there and says, Beth, these aren't any results of the press conference. You know, Mr. President, what are you going to do now? Who are you going to pay her? He goes, Beth, this is ridiculous. What is she, like 1/1000th Indian? You know, I'll tell you what. I'll have her tested myself. I mean, it's not something I'm going to enjoy doing. He just masterfully laid that down. But before you think it's all fun and games, notice the tonal shift within 24 hours, right? 24 hours within the time period that Pocahontas here releases her tests. And the media first initially fawning over this, and how the tone and substance of what the media was saying began to change. This is just one day later. Listen to this.
That the Cherokee Nation criticized Warren's announcement, saying that her use of the DNA test is inappropriate and, quote, undermining tribal interests with her continued claims of tribal heritage.
Yeah, a lot of people questioning whether this revelation really did win her in any points. For this is the reason it's controversial. When she was at Harvard Law School and when she was at the University of Pennsylvania, she represented herself as Native American. She contributed to a Native American cookbook called Pow Wow Chow, calling herself Cherokee. Oh, boy.
Ay, ay,
ay. Oh, boy.
19 days to the midterms, and the Democratic Party is reduced to talking about Elizabeth Warren's powwow chow. Listen, all of you that think that Trump is a dumb A-money-money, just consider for a minute that he literally trolled Elizabeth Warren into destructing her political career. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Trump's a masterful troll. He's a political genius, folks. And this is why the left has come unglued. This is why they're advocating for violence in the streets. When you're losing an argument, and this is serious, when you're losing an argument, that's when you punch your opponent in the face. The Democratic Party in America today, 19 days outside of the most critical election that they believed would legitimize their anti-Trump positions, are reduced to kicking their opponents. They've lost the argument, folks, plain and simple. Don't go anywhere. More on this hot sniggity goodness up next. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Rojofsky. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Nation. All right. Friday Funny. We're moving it up a little bit here in the program. Mixing and matching segments. We're doing this now because producer Robbie is back in the captain's seat that was occupied ever so briefly by one Vera and Ava Rojofsky last week. Robbie, we missed you. I missed you. It's nice to be back in the country in the same place, same undisclosed location with you. Dr. Audio manning the controls. You know, sometimes comedy as art, as an art form, is a criticism of something that is currently going on. Great comedy is ahead of the curve in this regard. It's proactive and not reactive. So with that, I would like to welcome to the program our newest sponsor. Now, this group here, they do DNA testing. And they first aired their ad on South Park in 2017, a year and a month before all this BS with Elizabeth Warren broke with her DNA test. I want you to sit back and enjoy this masterpiece.
Hey, you. That's right, you. Wouldn't you like to know the story of you? What makes you, you? DNA and Me is a genetic service that can help you find out exactly who your ancestors were. You might be surprised.
I thought I was just a standard white guy.
But DNA and me showed that I'm actually 4.2% Cherokee Indian.
Turns out I'm not totally white. I'm also part Northern Asian and even some Kurdish. I'm a victim of oppression.
The test is easy. Simply swab the inside of your mouth and send it into our labs.
People made fun of me for being French. DNA and me showed I was 8% Navajo. Nobody's making fun of me now or my people who are victims.
I'm 13% victim.
I'm 21% victim.
Order now and find out if your friends should be more sympathetic towards you. DNA and me. Are you in?
Where's the cough button? Sorry about that. South Park, they're always ahead of the curve on this. Those guys are brilliant. And here's why. What makes it funny is it's true. This is only a game. This is only a game that has to do with figuring out where you fall on the victim totem. That's all that matters. And it's become a currency in our society, and it's time to, it's enough. It doesn't matter. We're a meritocracy. We are a country that celebrates achievement. This reminds me so much. You think this is all new? This reminds me so much of communism. In the USSR and in the Soviet satellite republics, it was extremely common, but normal, right? When you had a Bolshevik revolution, a workers' revolution, it mattered who you were, what class you belonged to, and based on that, you received the perks of society. If your parents, okay, if they were industrialists, if they were bourgeois or aristocrats, you could forget life. Your life was going to suck. You were going to go work in a uranium mine. Now, if your dad was a coal miner, you were going to become a professor. Which, of course, by the way, resulted in some very interesting results. You know, the people that they used in the show trials in the 1950s in Czechoslovakia, for the most part, were coal miners, steel workers, and the like that were brought through a quick, hasty law school crash course, became judges, and sentenced hundreds of people to death. Sound familiar? Now, I'm not saying Dean Janis Austin or whatever his name is now after he transitioned over at UCI, you know, is committing that kind of malpractice on the world. I mean, this is not nearly as grave. But the point is we're putting people in important positions based on criteria that doesn't matter. If you want to create a post-racial society, if you want to be the country, right, that Democrats claim they want to have where, you know, race doesn't matter and where there are no more racism, no more racists, you've got to look beyond race. But the biggest racists out there are liberals. The biggest racists are academic liberals. I alluded to it earlier, but Harvard Law School right now is in the midst of a big lawsuit. The trial is ongoing. Asians who applicants who were rejected from the university sued. And in the discovery process, this runs in a lawsuit. It's a very typical thing. You ask the question, you know, do depositions and interrogatories of the other side, and it's fact finding. And in this fact finding process, they've discovered that, well, shoot, you're Asian minus X number of points. Why? I'll tell you why. Nobody feels bad for Asians. Liberals don't do. They don't. They're successful. They don't need us. And that's the dirty secret here. The Democrats want victims. They want to encourage their pathetic standing in society, right? They want to encourage. They want them to be weak because if they are weak, who do they need? They need the Democrats. They need the government. And the Democrats and the left in this country want us to be dependent on them. And they exploit our differences. They exploit perhaps some of our true inadequacies, right? We all have them. We all have our shortcomings. We all have our weaknesses. They plant seeds of envy, jealousy, and hatred. And the sole objective is to divide us, make us angry, and from there, get political power. And this is the Democratic Party that is not going to win very many elections. I'm telling you, it's just not who we are as a country. Sam Rogowski, back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, a story I have been following closely, and we talked about last week, Jamal Khashoggi, the journalist, freelance writer, also contributor to The Washington Post, last seen on October 2nd entering the Saudi consulate in Turkey. So this story now has, of course, developed some political dimensions to it. And as promised, it's become, oh, yes, everything right now that's going on, it has a Trump component to it. And of course, no matter what Trump does, it's wrong. So let's kind of go through this here, because I know it's out there in the media and a lot of things are being said. A couple days ago, Trump dispatched Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, to meet with the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. Or Salman, depending on how you pronounce it, goes by the initials MBS, and his father, the King of Saudi Arabia. They met. There were smiles, handshakes, warm words spoken, promises of a thorough investigation. And we all here, the left-wing media in particular, have lost our minds. Wow, can you... You believe them, Trump? You believe them? So here's what we know. We know he went into the embassy and that he didn't come out. We know we haven't heard from him since October the 2nd. We know that his fiancée, at least according to her own words, has not heard from him or seen him since she was left waiting outside of the consulate, right? She's outside of the consulate. She knows he did not leave because she was standing there on the corner in front of the door. There is purportedly an audio tape, a 7-minute recording of Jamal Khashoggi's brutal murder. Now, it's been characterized as basically a torture. It was conducted by a guy named Dr. Salam Muhammad al-Tubaigi. He's a forensics expert. He came in with a bone saw. We don't know this, though. We know that he was in the country. We know that he was part of a 15-member delegation, also referred to as a hit squad. Came in and told everybody to put in some music. I don't know if they used Apple earbuds or regular headphones. Maybe they had Beats by Dr. Dre. I don't know what they had on their little Saudi ears, but they put on music as they chopped up Mr. Khashoggi while he was alive. Now, purportedly, the physician who handled the dismemberment is a guy named Dr. Salam Muhammad al-Tubaigi, trained in Great Britain, worked for the National Health Service, where no doubt killing people is, I don't know. Not going to cast any aspersions here. But anyway, we haven't heard the tape. I don't think, and you know, the CIA and everybody, it's a leaky group of people, right? I think right now, if we had the tape, the Turks keep talking about the tape, right? The Turkish folks say they've got the audio tape. They know beyond a shadow of a doubt that what happened in the consulate happened. But I cannot imagine that with the public commentary from the media being that Trump is not handling this seriously and is coddling tyrants and is cozying up to the Saudis because of his personal business entanglements with them or whatnot. With that dialogue, that train of thought being out there, if someone in on our side had a tape and our people were evaluating its authenticity, I think we would hear about it. Somebody somewhere would say, hey, psst, New York Times, we have the tape. Trump is ignoring the tape. And even that would be a BS story, because what? We need to make sure before we come out swinging, right? The accusation is always that Trump speaks before he thinks. Not always true. And in this case, we are waiting to see what we're going to do. Now, I know. Why isn't the FBI investigating this? Well, for one, this guy wasn't a U.S. citizen, and this purported crime didn't occur in this country. But here's why this matters. This matters because it's not really a question of a violation of law. What it is a matter of ethics, right? If you want to be part of a Western community, if the Saudis want a seat at the table with the rest of us in the civilized world, they can't do this kind of stuff. I mean, you can't just bag a journalist and chop his fingers off, dismember him while he's alive, and pack him away in a duffel, and whisk his remains out of the country. We're not cool with that. That's the problem here. And we're also, I think, somewhat uneasy with the idea of, a guy like MBS here, Mohammed bin Salman, could turn on us. If he's a thug, could be dangerous. But as I explained to you last week, this is not an easy issue. I think they did it. But the flip side of it is, so what? Look at what Iran's doing. Look at what these countries are. And I know you don't always get to pick everything about your partner in a region. But if the grand scheme of things is to maintain order in the Middle East, keep Iran in check, save Israel, and prevent war, maybe, just maybe, you do have to smile and shake the hands of a guy who cuts up or orders the cutting up of another human being. These are very, very difficult questions to which there are not very good answers oftentimes. That's where the expression "the lesser of two evils" comes from. So I'm following the story. I'm very interested in it. And of course, the political angle of it, again, is misrepresented. And I will explain exactly what I mean of this when we come back with two very precise audio clips that sum it up. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Don't go anywhere.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rogowski. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, all right. What is the messaging right now from the media, from the Democrats, on the murder or the alleged murder of one Jamal Khashoggi? That Trump is in bed with the Saudis. He's going to let them get away with it. Da, 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 da. And look, I don't necessarily know. There's two things, right? One, I don't necessarily know if that's true. But I also don't necessarily know what our response ought to be here. Because turning our backs I understand the Saudis are our strangest, perhaps, of bedfellows. But we've had a lot of movement with the Saudis lately that's been positive. allowing a thawing of relations between the House of Saud and Israel. Allowing the use of Saudi airspace for Israel to launch attacks in the region that help us, This isn't easy. This isn't no easy answers. But the other part of this, of course, is how it's being misrepresented in the media. So here is Trump getting asked about it in a press conference. And here are his remarks. So this was Trump. This was Trump on 60 Minutes. Yeah, 60 Minutes in that interview, which we will talk more about next hour. Don't worry, we will. Here's what Trump said.
There's a lot at stake, and maybe especially so because this man was a reporter. There's something, you'll be surprised to hear me say that, there's something really terrible and disgusting about that if that were the case. So we're going to have to see. We're going to get to the bottom of it, and there will be severe punishment.
And that's what he said. Now, here is MSNBC contributor Jason Johnson talking about how Trump doesn't care about brown journalists.
The president is completely in the pocket of any other dictators in the world because he admires their ability to basically kill or tacitly allow the death of anybody who criticizes them. I don't think the president ever got on the phone with anybody in Saudi Arabia. I don't think he read any sort of, NSA analysis to come to that decision. He basically said, I don't care. It was a brown journalist. He's not an American.
He basically didn't say that, you idiot. Like, where you do you see how when you talk to your friends out there, you're out Friday night, you come across somebody. Oh, I don't like Trump. Oh, I know why they don't like Trump. They do is listen to these kooky people on CNN, MSNBC, and God knows where else. If all you do is consume this type of media, then yeah. You're going to think Trump is really the despicable human being. And by the way, this is why Trump did the 60 Minutes interview. Now, it didn't get the biggest of big ratings. But it got a lot of press afterwards, right? A lot of the interview got out, and it got out in other channels. And it even got Trump some begrudging respect from the interviewer, Leslie Stahl. And I think this is interesting to talk about and discuss. So when we come back, I sense a shift right now. I sense a shift. I also sense a maturing, believe it or not, from this administration. And that's, even with the horse face comment directed at one Stormy Daniels. Yeah, there is a certain maturing here. And I'm telling you, the combination of a more confident, focused, disciplined, and yet still masterfully mischievous Trump. I don't know. I think it's lethal to the Democratic Party. They got to come up with some new tricks. And they've got 19 days to do it here before the midterms. Sam Rejofsky, don't go anywhere. Back right after this.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Hi, Sam Rejofsky here, Sam Nation here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Yes, I am 100% Czech, but trans-American. Because that's how I identify myself. I wonder. So why is it that your chromosomes don't matter? A hill of beans, right? Chromosome. You got the boy chromosomes. You can be a girl. Got the girl chromosomes. You can be a boy. But we are sitting here, and we're actually debating what percentage of your DNA, if it belongs to one group or another, legitimizes you being a member of that group or whatnot. Think about it. Of course, it just doesn't make any sense. Somebody wants to identify. I said this with the Rachel Dolezal controversy. If somebody wants to identify as black when they're white, okay. I mean, if we're okay with a man identifying as a woman and vice versa, it's interesting how inconsistent liberalism is. And it has to do wholly with the access to the benefits of this victimhood hierarchy. If you opened it to everybody, well, everybody could get on board and there's nothing special about it. So what's going on? This is why, by the way, the Cherokee Nation was the first to get up there and say, oh, what Elizabeth Warren did is terrible. What did they say specifically? It was interesting. They said, called the test wrong and said it dishonors legitimate tribal citizens. Now, I understand, right, with Indian nations and sovereign Indian tribes, being a citizen of that tribe is a big deal. Okay, it confers upon them benefits, sometimes money, actual, you know, dividend checks going out every month. So who's in and who's out is a big deal. And all of a sudden you had the left debating about what it means to be a citizen of a tribe. They certainly don't care about that when it comes to immigration in this country. Nobody cares that they're a citizen. Matter of fact, if you're not a citizen and you belong to one of these victim groups, by all means, vote in the California elections. Yes, sirree, Bob, we want you voting. I don't care if you're a citizen or not. So these are just some very interesting things that have to be questioned. And I think all of these in toto, when we begin, you know, talking about them and analyzing them, undermine the credibility of the left, of the Democratic Party, and of all this nonsense that has been going on college campuses for years and years. If you've got college-aged human under your care, you're sending checks off to an institution of higher learning. This is what your money is going for, right? The tuition dollars are being spent to promote this type of idiocy. I don't know. I don't know how the answer, what the answer is if you're allowed to be, you know, transgender, but you can't be transracial. I don't get it. I'm apparently not smart enough. But the real problem is I have too much common sense. Okay, Trump. You know, this whole thing, this whole fight back, the pivot, and you always want to identify the moment where something is happening. And I sense something was underfoot. At first with the Melania interview. Because the first interview, Melania was on her, did her Africa tour. She did it without Trump. Of course, the narrative was they're fighting. You know, she doesn't even live in the White House. You know, they're, and by the way, in the interview, there were no ground rules. Now, I'm just going to tell you that the last time the Clintons did an interview with no ground rules was, you know, the second of never, right? So you had Melania go into the center, and what was, you know, I was in Europe at the time when the interview was announced, talking to my parents, and my mom just goes, oh, gosh, I hope she's not going to just, it's not going to devolve into some circus about their relationship and nonsense. And I just hope, I don't know, this just, my mom's been around the block. She's a smart woman and knows the liberals for what they are. Because, you know, of course, this is what, you know, the interview intended on bringing out there. Tom Lamas on ABC intended to squeeze some juice, some dirt, whatnot, out of Melania about Trump and prove all of their talking points correct. And that didn't happen. Now, we don't have time to go through every little bit of the interview, but it didn't happen. She held her ground. We talked about this last week. We covered this. She held her ground. And she came out swinging. Now, the next thing that happened, very interesting. She comes back to the country and her and Trump go down and visit victims of the hurricane. They go down to Mexico Beach. They go to the Florida Panhandle. I go up into Georgia. And I'll tell you, they are all loved up. Now, I am a married man and my wife listens to the program. I got to be very careful about what I say here. But I know a little something about marriage. And marriage may be something that brings us all together here today. Or it could also be something that occasionally experiences periods of friction. Look, I'm not tea reading here, body language, whatnot, but I'm a married guy. I'm just giving you my perspective on this. My perspective is this. They're in a good place. They're obviously putting the Stormy Daniels nonsense behind them. I don't know if there's another shoe that's going to drop, because if there's anything out there about Trump to be exposed, I'm pretty sure it would have come out by now. They're putting on a hell of a unified front. And when it comes to us guys, okay, when it comes to us, and probably for you, ladies too, I can't speak for you. I have a guy's perspective here. We need for things to be good at home, for things to be good professionally. Like, we kind of need to have the home front locked up in order for us to think clearly. And my sense is that Trump is thinking a lot more clearly right now because he's got things locked up at home. Melania hit this interview out of the park. I think it was hot. I think if you're, you know, Mr. Melania, if you're Donald looking at your wife just literally wiping the floor with ABC News beta male Mr. Lamas, you go, damn, hot. Good stuff. Come back. Go together on this trip. Go down there, knock it out. Again, they knock it out of the park. The consoler in chief, you've got these great positive headlines. They hold a press conference. Trump, he takes all the questions, doesn't let anything stick. And what you're seeing is a more focused president. Now, 60 Minutes, that sit-down interview began to show signs of this. This is where I think some of this new Trump confidence was emerging. Now, why is it here? It's not just because things are good at home. It's also because Trump won the Kavanaugh fight. It was an important fight to win. For us, it mattered because we didn't want to see a guy get totally screwed based on baseless allegations. We didn't want to live in a country where you can totally sabotage somebody's career with made-up nonsense. You know, you and I were not okay with that. For Trump, it may very well have been about that if you believe he's a man of principle. If you don't, at the very least, you have to assume that he cares about this as a political victory, right? What else happened around that time? Well, the NAFTA deal got done. Canada, speaking of beta males, their prime minister, Mr. Trudeau, caved. He folded. Gave us what we wanted. Better deal. NAFTA is now on. It has a new name. I don't remember it. I don't think anybody does. But at any rate, we've got a trade deal on Trump's terms. China's not faring very well in this little kerfuffle that we have, this trade war. And our economy continues to prosper. What else is going on? You've got this shift where the Democratic Party is literally losing its mind, doing stupid stuff. And the midterms no longer look like it's going to be the blue wave everybody thought it would be. So Trump's feeling a little bit better. Now, here's a snippet. And the Democrats cannot leave the Trump-Russia thing alone, right? To them, this is orthodoxy. They have to come back to this. And here you've got to listen to how good Trump is at reframing the issue, because you learn this when you talk to the media. The media want what they want. They don't. If you ever have to talk to the media, let me give you some free advice here. They are not interested in the truth. Virtually every reporter, with very few exceptions, wants to promote a narrative that they already have in their minds. They have an outline. It's in the back of their head, and they are looking for facts to substantiate their narrative. So they ask questions that many of these questions are so leading in certain contexts in court, you couldn't even ask them this way. They're so unfair. And politically inept people try to answer questions. Politically capable, smart people don't accept the premise of a bad question. And here is a classic, absolutely perfect example of what I'm talking about. Trump on 60 Minutes, Leslie Stahl, totally outgunned, outfoxed, outwitted by Trump. He wiped the floor with her. And here is an exchange about Putin, because what's the story about Putin? Trump says nice things about Putin. He's a coddler of tyrants. He loves tyrants, kisses tyrant, a money, money, nonstop, right? That's the narrative. And here is the exchange.
People don't understand why you never have a harsh word for Vladimir Putin.
Okay, you're right.
I don't understand.
I have been. You don't know what I talked about with Putin in the meeting prior to the press conference.
I mean, publicly, you never say anything harsh.
Excuse
about
me,
him publicly.
I didn't. I'm the one that gave Ukraine offensive weapons and tank killers. Obama didn't. You know what he sent? He sent pillows and blankets. And he's the one that gave away a part of Ukraine, where Russia now has this submarine.
No, I mean him personally. Vladimir Putin.
I think I'm very tough with him personally. I had a meeting with him. The two of us.
Yeah. Okay.
It was a very tough meeting, and it was a very good meeting.
He moved it. You see, so what's the criticism? Al Velshi on MSNBC. Trump's evading. He's evasive. He's a liar. He's a manipulator. He's reframing the issue of style versus substance. All these stupid liberal reporters want is, oh, you're not being mean to him. Trump's going out. This is irrelevant. I'm literally arming the Ukrainian government, preventing from further Russian annexation of Ukrainian territory, which your banana nutso president Barack Hussein Obama allowed willy-nilly, just literally he gave away the Crimean Peninsula, which isn't just a nice place to vacation with beaches and such. It's an important strategic port from where the Russian Navy can launch ships and submarines. Big win, right? It's a very important piece of dirt in the world. Certainly if you live in the Kremlin. Obama gave it away. Nobody cared. No, where was Leslie Stahl? Where was Al Velshi? Where was MSNBC, CNN? No, they were all just busy having tingles going up their legs. Oh, he's so eloquent. He's so handsome. They don't care about substance. It doesn't matter to them. But the problem is that substance matters in the world. And I'm telling you this as an outsider looking in. I know I live in Irvine, the backwaters of Orange County. But I'm telling you, I've spent time abroad more than the average person. And I see what I understand the dangers of Russia. I am from a country that is in a precarious position in Europe, I think even currently, vis-a-vis Russian aggression. And I'm telling you that Trump is being firm and consequential with Russia. He is. And that matters to me a lot more. Now, when we come back, I want to tell you, you want to know what Leslie Stahl thought of the interview? Because it ended up being that she became part of the story. Now, she became part of the story because CBS had to rehabilitate her. You know, yeah, this is like Conor McGregor getting knocked out in a fight, you know, just destroyed, right? And now they got to, if they ever have any hopes of bringing him, they got to rehabilitate him, right? So their prize fighter, Leslie Stahl, because they put a woman on it. They were going to put a woman because that's going to put Trump in check. And he can't, you know, because his people are telling him you can't be mean to a woman. Trump didn't give a crap. He went into that thing and he just bam, 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 factually attacking her and her nonsense. So CBS had to do some interviews with Leslie Stahl to rehabilitate her. One little gem came out of it, played for you right after the break. Masterful admission on the part of Leslie Stahl. Sam Rojofsky, don't go anywhere. Back right after this.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam Majowski. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Making radio great again. The king of common sense, rarely wrong, always right, reporting for duty. Yes, it's Thursday. I'm sorry. I know I mentioned earlier that I thought we could do the show on Friday this week, but regrettably, other plans were made, and I have to leave town a little bit earlier to accommodate this wedding of a good friend. So anyway, I appreciate your flexibility. And getting a show out this week before the full week has elapsed. Leslie Stahl did the Trump interview on 60 Minutes, hoping to, get a political scalp. No. That's no more Elizabeth Warren comments. that failed. That failed, and in turn, I think Leslie Stahl actually may have been a little bit impressed by Trump. Here is what she said, comparing the three interviews that she had done with him, one during the election, one immediately after, and then finally this third one that happened this week. Listen closely to this.
In terms of the three interviews, he was completely different. The one that really stood out was the one 3 days after he won the election.
Well, it's been a wild ride, I'll tell you that.
Where it was my impression that he was in total shock. Right now, he's so much more confident. He is truly president. And you felt it. I felt it in this interview.
Well, you know what she felt was when Trump told her, I'm president and you're not. That's the best part about this, because you know what I'm talking about? Do we have the clip? We don't have that clip. OK, so Trump says, well, you know what? I'm president and you're not. And the media, everybody just pundit class. Twitter went wild with this. What an a-hole. Speaking of Trump. But you know what? I think Leslie kind of liked it. My impression was he was right now, so much more confident. He is truly president. You know, these people are so dumb. Trump had to remind them, I think, that he's actually president. He has to be so literal with these bozos. I'm telling you, there's something happening. There is a shift occurring. You know who else feels it? Bob Mueller. Announcing yesterday, well, not announcing necessarily, it being conveniently leaked out because this is how Bob Mueller handles media for his little inquisition. Yes, it's Bob Mueller, the special counsel charged with investigating Russia collusion and interference with the 2016 presidential election. There are smoke signals being sent that apparently the investigation is set to wrap soon. And I'm just going to ask you, since I don't believe in coincidences, my job here in this chair is to connect the dots and look for, you know, patterns that may emerge. I'm telling you, what do you make of that? I heard that and I thought, this is, if you're Bob Mueller, right, part of your entire the only thing that puts wind in your sails is public opinion. If public opinion turns against Bob Mueller, turns against a special counsel, all of a sudden, stories that are going to be coming out in the media will be how much it's costing every day, how many lawyers are on payroll, those are all not good stories that Bob Mueller and no one affiliated with that team wants out. Now, nobody's writing those stories in the mainstream media as long as they're turning up with stuff. If they're successful, nobody cares how much it costs. It's practical truth. That it is ending soon. Without any big, I don't know, gotchas. You're right. No big gotchas. Is a sign that they're realizing they may be out of steam soon. that they may be burning up political capital faster than they can replenish it. No. You think that they're saving the best for last, some giant bombshell that they're going to drop on us. That's not how it – go back to Ken Starr. Go back to Monica Lewinsky, Ken Starr. We knew all about that dirt. By the time Ken Starr's report – and I don't know however many, 80 boxes worth of paper got delivered to Capitol Hill, we knew all the salacious details already. This is Washington. If two people know about it, it's not a secret. So I'm telling you, there are other signs out there that the tide is turning. And without Trump Russia, with Trump Russia basically going into thin air with just, I don't know, who do they got? A couple people on tax evasion, lying to the FBI. And what if this whole thing turns now against the Democrats? What if the next round of investigations is all in how and all the dirty tricks that the DNC played trying to help Hillary Clinton and how this entire investigation got started based on lies, based on deception and planted evidence, along with perjury committed in those affidavits submitted to the courts to get those warrants. All of that SHI, you know what, is swirling out there in a giant turd-nado that is going to touch down on these clowns, okay? And that's the word. I'll be back right after this. Sam Rogowski, don't go anywhere.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
The gifts keep on coming, this one in the form of 3,000 Native Americans coming from Honduras. I don't know if they're Native Americans. They're certainly more Native than Elizabeth Pocahontas Warren. They're not all Hondurans, by the way. There's Guatemalans in there, and I think some El Salvadorians. So about 3,000 people is being described as this mass migration, this caravan of people. Video leaked yesterday of some suspicious persons handing out cash to participants in this caravan. I'm going to tell you exactly where this cash is coming from. George Soros, are you here? Are you listening? No, look, this is a ploy. What, you think this timing is just accidental, right? We've got a midterm coming up 18 days, 19 days away. How long will it take them to cross Mexico? They did some rough math. They want to give them a few pesos in their pocket to speed them up. I don't know. Soros may send down. Well, he's not going to send his private jet. He doesn't want those smelly people in his jet. But he's going to send down like a cart or something. Yes. Absolutely. The left is using people in the height of personal tragedy to score political points. And here is why it's going to backfire. Are you ready for this? I'm going to give you some really ugly truth. Let's say you are an independent voter, which I don't really know what that means. It just means you're an idiot, right? And you can't make up your mind and you're, I don't know, this way, that way. Or you don't. An independent voter is one who lies to pollsters, too. Right. Liars. So they're liars and people can't make up their mind. But you're an independent voter. You're not a political animal. You're not a political wonk. You're not a diehard right winger or a leftist. You know, the thought of like 3,000, 4,000 people of a giant caravan of refugees entering the United States. I'm going to tell you something. I don't think it makes you too excited. Now you got an election coming up. You don't really love Trump, but you don't like the idea of a whole lot of migrants in your backyard. Where are some of these pivotal races occurring? Texas? Yeah, there's a pivotal race there, right? With Beto O'Rourke running against Ted Cruz. Well, where else? You've got the race in Arizona, what's her name, Sinema, the Democrat challenger, who is running into her own political foibles. But nonetheless, these are border states that are important Senate elections. What's the latest from Trump? Trump said today, this morning, if you, Mexico, because he's putting it on Mexico, the three states where this caravan has started and has moved through, which are El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, they share a pact where you can travel in between the countries with just your government ID card. You don't even need a passport. So basically very easy to move across the border. There is no such pact between those three countries and Mexico. So the big border soon to happen border crossing here is Mexico. And Trump has said to Mexico, you better stop this thing. You better stop this thing or I am going to seal the U.S.-Mexico border using the U.S. military. Now, what does that mean to Mexico? Well, you think Mexico depends a little bit on tourist dollars? You think Mexico depends a little bit on trade between, let's say, you know, Mexico and Texas, California, New Mexico, Arizona? You think Mexico might be hurt a little bit if we, for a period of time, completely shut down the border? I think so. Definitely. So Mexico's response has been to send two 727s full of federales down to the, you know, Guatemalan border. That happened this morning. See, they take Trump seriously. I know the media doesn't. I know the media thinks he's a clown. But where it matters, they take him they take him seriously. And I'm going to say how this backfires, right? How does this backfire as a political stunt on the Democrats? The Democrats, I'm telling you, the coastal liberals are so delusional, right? Because I have them as neighbors. I live in a very nice gated community. These left-wing nut job, you know, neighbors of mine, they live behind gates. They're safe. They're secure. Oh, yes, 2,000, 3,000, 10,000 migrants, bring them in, compassion. But do they want them camping out on our golf course? In our country club? Hell no. Absolutely not. And that's the height of hypocrisy. So the people who are talking about this, people who are on TV, the people who are analyzing this, people that are out there handing out cash, right, helping this caravan along. Oh, we're going to get Trump. We're really going to get him because we're going to have all these poor people show up at the border and mean Trump is going to shut it down. And that's it. We don't want Republicans that are mean and evil and terrible. Or there's an alternative reality that maybe actually is the real reality, which is the one they're not living in, but the rest of us are, which is that deep down inside, Americans respect borders, understand that immigration is fine, but it needs to be legal and organized. And the idea of a mob rolling across the border is not a good one. And so Trump, with all his faults, if he were to deploy the military to the border a day before, 2 days before the midterm elections, I think would seal some significant victories in the midterms. That's what I think. And it's yet another horrible, terrible miscalculation on the part of the Democratic Party. Don't go anywhere. I'll tell you a little bit about the Arizona race coming up. That was one that was supposedly going to go to the Democrat. I don't think so anymore, although the race is neck and neck. I'll explain why. Sam Rzhovsky, back after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, the race in Arizona for the Senate has been neck and neck now. It was for a while breaking for the Democrat, whose name is Kristen Sinema, or Sinema. Not sure how she pronounces that. She's running against Republican Representative Martha McSally. So they're both congresswomen. Can you still say that, or are they congressmen? Now, I don't know. It's hard to keep up. So at any rate, two congresspersons running against each other for the vacancy. This is for the vacancy created by Jeff Flake, who's retiring from the Senate. This is a race that everyone is watching very closely. Now, Kristen Sinema, the Democrat in the race, just had some terrible bad news happen to her. Audio clips emerged of her at a event back in 2011. She's out of state, trashing the good state of Arizona. She says the five C's about Arizona, but that ought to be known as there's a sixth C missing. Now, this is something that I guess Arizonians know, that there's five C's, are really proud of it. Cattle, copper, citrus, cotton, and climate. That's for all the people who haven't been in Phoenix in July. Now, she goes, you know, those were the five things that our state historically made its money off of. But I would add a sixth C. It's called crazy. So that leaked. That wasn't very good for her. But then even worse yet, she said how in 2010 used the term laboratories of democracy to describe the states such as Arizona. But Arizona was more accurately the meth lab of democracy. Well, needless to say, this is not going over well with voters in Arizona. And I think when you combine this, the Senate races are really where it's turned. Have you seen how Ted Cruz has totally broken away in that race? It was neck and neck, too, a month ago. And then the Kavanaugh hearings came around, right? And Americans saw how disgusting these Democratic antics were with Chuck Sleaze Schumer out there just running roughshod over any principles of fairness, decency, and due process. And suddenly people realize, you know, hey, we're voting for something that's bigger than just a candidate. The Democrats succeeded in nationalizing local elections, but not in a good way for them, right? This is what Democratic Party strategists wanted from the get-go. They wanted to nationalize the election, make it a referendum on Trump. And Trump and the Republicans held firm on Kavanaugh. Again, I do not think that it was accidental that Justice Kennedy's retirement was announced when it was announced. The timing of all of this was pivotal. I think the Democrats are busy chasing Russian collusion. What they forgot in all of their stories about Trump and Senate Republicans fighting was that there was actually collusion going on between the White House and Senate leadership. And this Kavanaugh deal comes about at the worst time for the Democrats, and the Democrats fall for it. They go all in with their smear after smear fight to the death. The really decent man and kind of a vanilla guy, really not the most radical conservative justice Trump could have picked. And it all colossally backfired on them. And you're seeing it occur in the polls. And right, I always suspect these polls of leaning left. I'm getting these phone calls too right now. The questions are also leading. You know, I pick up the phone 7 o'clock at night. If somebody's calling my house right now at 7 o'clock at night, I know who you are. You're a pollster. And I listen to these questions. And, you know, do you answer the calls from the pollsters? I did one of them. And it was the biggest waste of time in my 5 minutes of my life I'm never going to get back. So I don't answer those calls. I think a lot of busy people who don't want to be challenged on the fact that they like Trump, don't want to be challenged on the fact that they like Cruz, don't want to be challenged on the fact that they really are not into mob tactics and en masse illegal immigration. They just don't pick up. They don't want to talk to any pollsters. They're done with them. And those people are going to go out there and vote. So blue wave, I don't see it happening. Sorry. We'll see. We've got 18 days. So we'll see how it all transpires. But that is my prediction here. All right. Don't go anywhere. Want to still talk about Melania and her interview and Kanye. I know these were topics we touched base on last week. But I want to revisit this because there's a missing thread here of substance again that is being completely overlooked in the shrill hysteria over style. I will explain when we come back.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Sam Rogowski here. All right, when Kanye went to the Oval Office, Mr. Yeezy goes to Washington. It was widely reported about his total breakdown, crazy antics, a lot of racial commentary made in the media about that visit. And I'll tell you this. Missed in all of this was the substance of the event. Is there something tangible that Kanye walked away with? And he has been dealing with Trump on, and it's a pivotal issue, and it's a criminal justice reform. Now, for as long as I can remember, it was people like Robbie, really, as libertarians, producer Robbie, the one and only, who broke with established Republican Party orthodoxy, dealing with these enormous sentences that were being handed down for drug crimes. As far as I can remember, and you know this, is you know, every time somebody says, we got a drug problem, we've got to get tough on drugs. And one of the ways that our governments, Congress, and the president has gotten tough on drugs is by making crazy sentencing guidelines, mandatory sentencing for people with even very minor drug offenses. So we're incarcerating people for life. And one of the examples of this is that that gal whose name was Alice Marie Johnson. She got a life sentence in 1996. This is the woman whose case was championed by Kim Kardashian West. Went to the White House, talked to Trump about this. Trump commuted her sentence, basically got her released. She served 22 years in federal prison for what? She was a drug dealer's receptionist. That's what she was. She worked the phones. Messages between the distributors and the sellers. It was nothing, right? And then this gal's on the phone arranging, passing messages for her drug dealer boss and gets a life sentence. First-time offender. Now, as long as I've been alive, I've always heard from my friends on the left, what? This is racist. This is racist because these terrible drug sentences impact who primarily? Poor people of color. There is finally a president who's actually big on this issue. His name's Donald Trump. But the left doesn't like Donald Trump, so guess what? They don't want to hear it. The entire purpose of Kanye being at the White House was to push his agenda. He's got this pet project, him and Kim Kardashian do. And that's wholesale criminal justice reform. Trump's having some success. He's got even Chuck Grassley, Mr. Dinosaur himself in the Senate, but important member because he's the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, on board with getting not just kind of some tweaks, but wholesale changes to our sentencing guidelines. You know, I'm telling you, this is such a bad use. And you know, I've evolved politically on the subject. Because I used to be far bigger of a neoconservative and have morphed into all but full libertarian. And I'll tell you, I really, really think that you're putting people away for drug crimes for life for 10 years, 8 years. I mean, it's nuts. It's absolutely crazy. There's a marketplace out there for people, illegal or not, because people want to ruin their lives with drugs. And putting participants in that away for these types of years is an insane use of our resources, our courts, our prisons, and our police. So at any rate, that's the real part of the story. And it was interesting to me because in the interview that Melania Trump did with Tom Lamas over at ABC that was aired last Friday, Lamas asked her about this issue, about what was the most surprising thing to you as First Lady coming into this. Listen to Melania Trump's answer, because she is spot on. Now, sorry, the whole interview played with some dumb music in the background. So that we got some dumb music in the background. So just ignore the music, but listen to what Melania Trump says on the money.
What's the most surprising thing about being first lady for you?
It's sad to see that organizations and foundations that I want to partner with, I choose not to because of administration. And I feel they choosing the politics over helping others.
Organizations and foundations I want to partner with choose not to because of the administration. I feel they're choosing the politics over helping others. You know what? If you have gone your entire life as a Democrat wanting to reform our criminal justice system, and you believe that people of color, poor people of color, are unfairly targeted by virtue of their environment and their propensity, I guess, environmental propensity, to commit these low-level drug crimes that are getting them put away for years and years in federal prison. And this has been an issue for you. And you refuse to get on board with Trump because he's Trump, because of what he says on Twitter, because of how much you don't like him. You have an opportunity right now. And guess what? Kanye gets it. Kanye, the guy that everybody's saying is crazy, he gets it. So maybe he's not the one that's crazy. Maybe you guys are. All of you uptight, stuck up, left-wing institutions that are out there, quote-unquote, helping people. You are choosing your own ego over the lives of people in prison. Go screw yourself. Literally. I have no time for you. Neither does America. We're moving on. All right, that was the show. Sam Rogowski, see you here next week. Friday, I promise. Friday. Have a great weekend.